Hello and welcome to the last Big Mouth of 2018 with me, Andrew Harrison, and Sean Pattenden, the festive noddy holder to my super yobbish Dave Hill. Hello, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you.
Jolly good. You got your Christmas raving in with Friends of the Show Orbital on Saturday.
Yes, Friends of the Show. They want to come back.
Do they?
Telling me, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, they do. Can come on again. They have some diva demands, though.
What are their diva demands?
Certain guests they want. I can't tell you. It's a secret.
What? They want to have like all of Kraftwerk or
one of Crass.
Yeah. I think they'd be really good at asking people what they think about, you know, the latest adaptation of Great Expectations or something.
I think they'd be perfect, yes.
Something on Netflix about
it. But it was very good. It was a very good show. Matt Smith from Doctor Who was there as well. Yeah,
sure.
Bouncing up and down at the front, raving, his socks off.
I couldn't go because I had the flu and I'd been robbed of Doctor Who. Oh, well, never mind. Who else should do a Christmas show? Should the Horrors do a Christmas show?
I think they are a Christmas show.
What about the national Radiohead Christmas show?
Radiohead's Christmas show.
Would be tremendous fun.
Yes.
I was walking past the Roundhouse on Sunday and Hatebreed were doing their Christmas show.
Yay!
The Hatebreed Christmas show. Anyway, this week it's the second of our annual roundups of the best and or most underrated stuff of 2018. And we have two of our regular guests in to choose their best records, TV, films and other stuff from the year. Miranda Sawyer is the legendary pop journo and smash hits graduate who now covers radio for The Observer as well as actual books. Hello, Miranda.
Hello.
Happy Christmas. How you doing?
I'm all right. Slightly flustered, but that's the Christmas way.
Absolutely. Double flustered. Are you with spring in your step now that Jose Mourinho has been given his taxi?
So I know. Yes. Thank you so much, Andrew, and your team.
We live to serve and to make Manchester United fans happy. That's all we're here for. What sort of a year do you think 2018 is going to go down as in the pop schematic?
That's quite hard. An overall view. I mean, a lot of changey things. I think everything seems to be in flux, which is all right by me. I quite like flux myself. And there's a few, I mean, some of the choices that we've made show that things are in flux and things are changing for the better, one hopes. Yeah. Pop music and pop culture is the thing that you turn to when everything else is terrible. And obviously, everything else is terrible.
So we
must turn to pop culture and I believe it will save us.
I had quite a freeing moment, though, when I looked at, I think it was The Guardian's Best Albums of the Year thing. And I'm quite accustomed to have never heard The Guardian's Best Albums of the Year, but to have never heard of The Guardian's Best Albums of the Year, I thought, that's it, you're officially old now. I am officially an old person. One of your highlights this year was interviewing the remaining surviving Beastie Boys, The Observer.
Yes, I did.
How were they?
They were exactly the same. I mean, it's just funny because they were exactly the same. So they're impossible to interview. I mean, really difficult. So you try your best and you try to kind of corral them into some form of interview. But every question you ask, their answers go on for 5 minutes and it's just them telling each other off or deciding what they're going to eat or forgetting. Or it's like, I came home and I listened to the interview and it's a long time since I've had this. I had a huge panic. I thought, I've got nothing to write. There is nothing here. I talked to them for an hour and a half. There's nothing here. But it's just, you just have to kind of write how they are, and that's how they are. Yeah. You know?
As the mother of a young son, did you find them easier to deal with now?
Shut up,
Mike D. Answer the question.
Yeah, well, that never works with Mike. He slightly works with Adrock because he's got slightly less patience. They're just, you know, they're called the Beastie Boys, and they are still boys. They're over 50, and they are very boyesque.
Mm.
I would say.
Do you think they'll do records as the remaining Beastie Boys?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think they'll make records ever again?
I think they might make records, but it won't be under the Beastie Boys and they won't perform as the Beastie Boys because they just can't. But they are, you know, they have side projects and they will probably do those. They were talking about having a kind of Sound Clash record, so, you know, one of them would make a track and then the other one would make a track, which I think would be quite good.
Passive-aggressive Sound Clash. That'd be excellent. We should do a passive-aggressive podcast. John.
Also returning for a Big Mouth Victory Lap is Eamon Ford, music business writer, enormous fan of U2, and tabloid journalist, according to Jack White, who is also a huge fan of Eamon. And enjoy him while you can, because next year he'll be Eamon Ford, author of The Final Days of EMI, Selling the Pig, which is published on February the 7th. Hello, Eamon. Happy Christmas.
Hello. Happy Christmas to you all.
What do you think will go down in the annals of pop 2018?
I think there's a very clear distinction that's being marked out between the charts, which is an incredibly slow-moving thing because of streaming, and everything else. I think that there's been amazing music this year, but if you look at the charts, the charts have always been bad, but I think that as a kind of cultural lightning rod, I don't think the charts bear anything, importance to kind of what's happening with music. So I think there's two charts happening.
Yeah.
There's the chart that's being driven by Spotify and its major playlists, which is the de facto chart, and then there's everything else. So I've probably heard more great music this year than I've heard any year. I've got a whirlwind Spotify playlist of like 600 tracks at the minute. It's been a phenomenal year. But then you look at the stuff that is clogging up the charts at the minute and you go, that had no bearing on me. That sounds a really snobbish thing, but I think that there's two very clear channels. There's the ultra populist, which is being driven by algorithms, and then there's a secondary chart that's slowly kind of crawling out of the primordial soup.
It's like the 80s. It's like the indie chart, isn't it? Mainstream and alternative.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I think when a hit happens and it's something that you think is good, it makes you as excited. You know that thing where you think, oh my God, they went to number one.
Yeah,
that's just really brilliant.
Yeah, they smashed the
But I think that it's slightly different because it's all about volume. So the biggest tracks get served up on the biggest playlist. It's a vicious cycle and they just stay the biggest. So like you look at the Christmas playlists and it's the same 20 songs.
And
because they get played again, they remain the 20 biggest songs. So Spotify's algorithm just goes, well, they're clearly the most popular. Mm. So it's just repeat, rinse and repeat, really. Although, interestingly, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is for You Is You, has had its highest ever chart placing in the US. It's gone it went top 10 for the first time last year and has gone to number 7. But there's a weird thing because it didn't actually qualify for the singles chart on original release because it wasn't actually released formally as a single. It went on the radio chart.
Goodness me.
So that's why there was a weird chart rule.
The man screws up again.
But every year you will see a handful of tracks will come back. And I think that's going to become the kind of resting face for the charts for the rest of the year.
So if you were a pop person, you need to make it a Christmas song or a summer song or those kind of things.
Things kind of really bad in. I think there was something ridiculous.
About Mother's Day.
Yeah, there was like something ridiculous, like 10 number ones or something this year in the UK. It's a really slow-moving chart. People complained about the charts in the early, not the mid-90s, this kind of massive kind of format and war into the early 2000s, and it ruined the chart. I think the chart's being ruined in the other way, where stuff just isn't moving because it's all about streaming volume.
Now, you've seen lots of live bands this year.
I have.
What's been your live highlight? Have you got one?
I would have said, I'll talk about them later, I would have said Shame because that's just my default answer for everything, but I went to see Sir Thumbs at the O2 on Sunday, and he wheeled out Ringo Starr to play drums on Get Back, which was genuinely the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
Really?
50% of the Beatles live on stage.
Did Ringo go peace and love, peace and love?
He did, he threw the peace symbol. That was quite, and he played for like a solid 3 hours. He did 40 songs.
With Ringo?
No. Only one with Ringo.
Which one did he do with Ringo?
He did Get Back, and Ronnie Wood came on as well. So people were kind of going, my God, a Rolling Stones band, but nobody cared. They were going, it's Sir Thumbs and Sir Rings.
That sounds awful.
Yes, it was terrible.
Right, never mind the Beastie Boys. You interviewed Jean-Michel Jarre.
I did.
I'm quite a big fan. How was he?
He was great in that kind of abstract, philosophical way that French people do so easily. Everything is kind of profound and deep and stuff. And right,
smoking a fag when he was talking to
he
you.
He wasn't.
In a roll neck jumper.
I was interviewing him exclusively about technology rather than music. And like his whole, he is this kind of incredible auteur. He built the studio in his kitchen that he recorded Oxygen on. And like he was talking about his live shows and stuff. And my brother, who has no interest in any popular music, the only artist he likes is Jean-Michel Jarre. So I got him to record a little video for my brother. And my brother, can I swear?
Go on.
My brother lost his shit. Because I hadn't told him that I was going to interview him. Yeah. And then I got him to record a little video.
Fantastic.
And he said, yes, enjoy your life was how he ended it.
Did he lose his shit as much as your mum lost her shit when I got Cliff Richard to send her a message?
That was probably more hysterical. Yeah.
Great. We could go on.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to hear Eamon and Miranda's favourites of the year later in the show, and Andrew's as well, after he tells you this.
It's the season for giving to the underprivileged and the less fortunate, so why not help Big Mouth to cover its costs by supporting us on Patreon, the crowdfunding platform. As we sit in our Dickensian cellar, warming our hands on a burning pile of Cheryl Fernandez Versini Tweedy Cole albums, it's good to know that we can rely on our listeners to keep us going through the winter months and beyond. Send us the equivalent of a fiver a month, that's more or less the price of a pint, and we will send you an exclusive extra bit which we record after every show just to say thank you. Search Patreon Big Mouth or go to the Big Mouth Facebook page to find out more. All we are saying at Christmas, more than any other time of the year, is, for God's sake, buy us a pint.
Yeah, please.
Okay, we've asked each of our guests to choose an album, a TV thing, a movie and a track of the year, plus a miscellaneous from any category they like. We're going to start with Miranda Sawyer's selections. And here's a montage. It's the trailer for Sky... It's a montage. It's the trailer of a Sky TV series, Patrick Melrose, then Christine and the Queens with Damn, What Must a Woman Do from her album Chris, and then Marvel's super woke superhero, Black Panther.
We've taken Aqaba.
Sir?
I'll have another of your very refreshing martinis. Bring me some salmon tartar followed by some steak tartar. Ta-ta-ta-ta. Spicy, very spicy. And your wine list.
Thank you. Self-harming resistant depressant.
Patrick, narcissistic, schizoid, suicidal alcoholic.
Don't you dare! Don't you dare do that again!
Nothing that happens to you as a child really matters.
The secret is not to interfere.
Education should be something of which a child can later say, if I survived that, I can survive anything.
Well, let's just see.
Sawyer's favourites of the year there. Patrick Melrose, Chris by Christine and the Queens, and Marvel's Black Panther. So let's start with Patrick Melrose. What's so great about this bloody Cumberbatch again?
I don't really like Benedict Cumberbatch, so this is quite a kind of revelation for me. So Patrick Melrose was on Sky, so quite a lot of people didn't really see it unless you have access to Sky or Now TV or whatever. But it's a series, it's five episodes, and it is the adaptation of five novels by a man called Edward St. Aubin, which you might be able to guess he's incredibly posh. So these novels, which I entirely recommend, they're completely brilliant. They are astonishing, but they're very novel-y. So, you know, you read them and you think they're kind of impossible almost to make into a series. And what they're about is a man, Patrick Melrose, who grows up in a very difficult circumstance, which a lot of which actually did happen to the author. He grows up incredibly privileged, but he is abused as a child, and he grows up and has a raging and slightly hilarious drug addiction. So the first, it's incredibly hard to adapt. Mm. And to see a kind of programme that essentially is, you know, a posh drug addict going through his life and you feeling sympathy. I mean, normally I would feel no sympathy for this person at all. He is absolutely not my kind of person. But he is really brilliant and all the characters in it are amazingly drawn and you feel immense sympathy for these people, who normally you would not feel. I've got a really great fact as well, given that we were talking about the Beastie Boys. So the producers of this of this show are Michael Jackson, who was the controller of BBC One, BBC Two and Channel Four in his time, and his partner, whose surname, shall we say, is Horowitz and is Adrock's sister?
Flipping heck.
Wins within wins. So
it's almost as if there's a huge media elite controlling it.
So this is about a posh heroin addict.
Yes,
so it's like kind of train spotting or train what-watting.
Yes, yeah. It is. It is a little bit like that. But it's, you know how train spotting is almost... Trainspotting is a pop video, isn't it? I mean, it's an extended pop video, I love Trainspotting. But you don't go very deep into why anybody is doing this. And it's not done in a kind of like, oh, woe is me. It just goes through his life and you understand it a lot more. And also you have immense sympathy with him because he's got that properly sharp tongue. You know, a bit like Rupert Everett, but like times 100. Yeah. You know, people like that who you think, oh my God, I can't believe you said that, and you love them for saying it.
Fully functioning addict.
Yeah, I mean,
because
that's
the thing. Like you
functioning
read,
is not quite
right.
There.
But you read interviews with kind of addicted pop stars, and they say that you can be a functioning heroin addict because you've got easy access to drugs.
Yes, it's not quite like that. I mean,
you don't have that kind of high and then the craving and stuff like that. No, you've got people around you who can fix it.
No, it's not like it's a very lonely life.
Yes, and what's good about the show, we did it earlier in the year. I think you're away, Andrew.
I was away.
Yes. Yeah. Is that you see how hard it is for him to get drugs in New York, and he has to go to downtown, and it's not that he gets given them on a silver salver.
Right. No, not
you see,
at all.
It actually be quite difficult.
He can't afford it. He doesn't have to like rob his name.
Of course, but say it's amazing in that your sympathies are with someone who comes from privilege, and I think that's a real.
Did you like it, Sean?
I loved it.
It was absolutely brilliant.
I thought the first episode trounced all of the rest because I got less interested in the backstory, but it's wonderful. And Cumberbatch is really good.
Yeah, he's really good, genuinely normally can't stand
him. Yes, I agree.
Well, I'm generally a proponent of Cumberbatch, but I've just seen that he's going to be playing Dominic Cummings in the HBO Brexit series, and I think I feel peak Cumberbatch approaching because we don't need the mighty talents of the guy who's such a great actor who was able to reputedly turned down the role of Doctor Who, humanising this bloody monster, this kind of, I think Dorian on Remain X called him a faded megamind, you know, this horrible Dominic Cummings figure. So I think that may well be maybe asking questions of Mr. Cumberbatch in 2019.
I quite like the trailer for that, though.
Yes, the trailer's great.
Yeah.
I'm opening my mind for that.
Don't you think it made it look like Brexit was a really exciting, great thing?
I think the machinations behind it are really interesting.
We'll be talking about that this time next year.
You've got to pay, you know what, Andrew? You've got to pay the baddie sometimes.
Yes, but you don't have to make it look like the goodie. Anyway, never mind. Your album of the year, Chris by Christine and the Queens, which you talked about on the show before.
Yeah.
Give us the hard sell. Why is this an album of the year?
Hard sell is, okay, if you like kind of Quincy Jones pop, and if you don't, there's something slightly wrong with you.
Yeah.
And you will love this. You will love this album. It sounds slightly, it kind of refers back to the 80s. It's got quite a kind of sparkly, hard edge to it. And it's like really, it's really good disco, which, you know, is... You know, who doesn't want that? Especially if there's a bit of French in there. That's absolutely amazing. But I would also, I mean, I suppose I lie all the culture I like kind of comes out of something. It doesn't, you know how you just spoke about, Eamon, just things that just seem to stay there forever and they don't seem to be related to anything. Mm. The thing I like about Chris, as she's now called, as opposed to Christine in the Queens, is that she's come out of a kind of culture and out of a genuine thing that is her and seems to represent a certain type of young person that is quite often maligned. And when I saw her live and I interviewed her on stage, and both times I was immensely moved, actually, because she plays with gender in a way that's kind of sophisticated and exciting, and it makes you realise as a woman how rarely you see a woman on stage being sexy if it's not in an incredibly stereotypical feminine way. So to see a woman bare bits of her flesh, but not in a kind of I am the world's most sexiest woman and you cannot resist me is it's completely astonishing. You never see it. And so I feel like I'm kind of selling her as an entity because I think she's really important. There's some other people that have been chosen. I know that Sean's chosen Janelle Monáe, and I would kind of say the same thing about her, that to see somebody like that that's claiming their sexuality and using it in a way that I'm so bored of traditional kind of, you know, heteronormative sexuality, and I hate to bring this stuff in, but it's true. It's just boring. And so to see somebody who's doing something new, it's just such a relief.
She seems to have kind of built a an entire world that's hers.
Yeah, and very rare.
Like, you will have a very crafted world in a kind of Beyonce, Ariana Grande way, which is, it's very synthetic in a sense. And this does, it genuinely feels that this is just all her. It's, she's basically turned her life into her art.
Yeah, and she, I mean, she kind of, you know, she choreographs the stage show. She has the ideas for the videos. She doesn't direct the videos, but she has the ideas for the videos. It is her. Yeah. And so that's, you know, when somebody's really good at pop, I just think, fantastic.
And they are really good pop songs as well, aren't they?
Oh, they're great.
It wouldn't work if they weren't great pop songs.
No. I would have no interest, obviously.
Yeah. Sticking with the wokeness, Marvel's Black Panther is still the second biggest movie of the year. Yes. $1.3 billion.
Wow. Mm.
And it actually beats Infinity War in America.
Really?
And this time last year, people were saying, will anybody go and see a Black Superhero movie?
No.
So it is quite encouraging, isn't it? It's like everybody.
It was incredibly. It was an event. Oh, yeah. I love pop culture events. And it's a really good film, which is also useful. You know, some films you go to see and they're a pop event and that you are disappointed. I go to see a lot of superhero films because I have a 13-year-old boy, and you know, sometimes I am really snoozing in the back. And Black Panther was really exciting. It's simply really exciting to see a massive major film with a load of black characters. It's just, you know, that isn't about slavery, really. I mean, it's quite, you know, that is quite unusual. And the characters in it are really endearing, you know. So I think Killmonger is a really great baddie.
He's a villain with a point.
I mean, he's a villain with a point, and the kind of representation of him versus Black Panther is quite an interesting kind of representation of what people see as good and bad black masculinity within America. Mm. So an upright man who follows his father and does, you know, well, he stands up for his family, but, you know, he is within that. And then you have somebody who is a maverick, and that is not really, those are the two kind of stereotype typical black male figures that you're allowed in America, but they're played with. And the female characters are great. Even just like little things where, you know, the kind of fighter female has to go to a normal life and wear a wig. And she's like, what is this?
Yes.
Like, what is this? And then she, I mean, it's a brilliant, I've used this gif on many occasions. She takes her wig off and she uses it as a weapon. It's just...
Wig weapon.
It's a big weapon. Mm. It was a great event. And it kind of, it's great to prove all the naysayers wrong. You know, black culture has provided us with the most brilliant moments of pop culture for kind of decades and decades and decades. Mm. And to have it properly acknowledged was just, I thought it was thrilling.
I like the wig thing. It reminds me of Moo Moolam in the agreement negotiations, where she would take her wig off in exasperation.
Exactly. A woman removing her wig scares everybody.
Yeah,
it was brilliant.
What I loved about it, obviously I loved it because I'm an ancient Marvel nerd, but the fact that it kind of managed to connect like fantasy Africa with real life Africa and real life modern black America. So there's a great kind of contrast between this is the world of many of the kids who are going to see the film, contrasted with this fantasy universe of Wakanda where like they got the technology right and they're a power in the world. I thought it was really touching, actually.
Yeah,
to see
it's amazing.
Old idea.
Yeah, and Killmonger's final speech, very touching. You know, I didn't want him to die, but obviously that's the best villains. You never want to die.
This is true. Now, we've asked everybody for another thing. And Miranda, to my horror, said, do you want to talk about Doctor Who? And this is absolutely shocking to me. What did you make of Jodie Whittaker's first series?
Okay, so, I could talk about this for hours, but obviously I won't. Maybe me and Andrew will talk about it for hours later. But okay, so Doctor Who. Doctor Who, I was immensely pleased that Jodie Whittaker became Doctor Who. It was fantastic. I believe I may have shed a tear. But I have to say I am slightly disappointed with this series. And it's because there are too many characters in it. So it's hard for her to establish a strong relationship with her what is normally just one sidekick. She has several sidekicks. Mm. And it is aimed at a younger audience. That's okay. But it means that problems that she comes across are solved very, very easily. The villains aren't that scary, and everything is solved very quickly. Whereas with a previous Doctor Who's, there were things to do with time and space. You had to work things out. There was a genuine emotional connection quite often between the Doctor and whoever the kind of, you know, assistant was. And I just feel that some of those elements have gone. And every time I watch it, I have to say, with my son, he says they've ruined it.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I like her.
I love her.
I think she's a great choice.
She's amazing.
But I think she's being written in a very kind of almost a two-dimensional sense in that her role is to go around telling everybody how brave they've been or how great it was that they stood up to that problem. I think there have been a fair few genuinely frightening incidents in it, like the villain in the first and the final episodes, that kind of tooth-studded,
toothy person,
sadistic monster.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty good and genuinely frightening. And the penultimate episode where there's an alternative universe on the other side of a Swedish, very, very frightening.
Yeah.
But there's no retribution deaths going on.
No.
Bad guys don't actually die. Even sexy time racist got sent back to
yeah, and
into
no
the
one dies. And there's a point where I actually thought, oh, maybe it's quite interesting. The final episode, I actually thought that one of her assistants might die, and I thought this would actually make it interesting if somebody got sent back to that world, and it would be interesting. And just there's no jeopardy.
There's some stakes are required,
and there's no jeopardy, and she's too nice, and it's and the quality of relationships are not strong enough, and that is diminishing what should be a really brilliant series.
She needs to be a little bit more weird. She needs a bit more Tom Baker.
Yeah, and you need to just not make, you know, it's very hard if you're a woman in that role because you represent all women all the time, which is constantly a problem for women. But, you know, women can be a bit crap. Why don't you make her a bit crap rather than constantly being good all the time?
To be fair, there's only really one episode in this series where her being a woman is an issue, and it's the Witchfinder's one. She's a witch, duck her, drown her.
Yeah.
And it's like they've deliberately stepped away from going, let's have a woman do the role here. Because many of the things that she does in this series could have been performed by a male actor.
Yes. Yeah.
There's not an awful lot of, and now a woman's running the TARDIS.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, there's not going to be another series till 2020, so maybe these things will be addressed. I don't know.
Yes, let's hope so. Listen to us. Obviously, the people who write Doctor Who will be listening to it, and they will correct this.
They absolutely will. Finally, Miranda, your track of the year is Hangman by Dave, which we've had on the show before.
Yes, OK, Hangman. I'm going to talk to Eamon about this, because I think Dave is very interesting. So you were talking about how the charts are dominated by tracks and they don't move. There was a track that went to number one, which was by Dave and Freddo, and that was it's a very typical kind of Dave track, really. And but it's the number one that stayed for a long time. And I find Dave, who came in the wake of Stormzy, he used the same producer, and he's from South London, not exactly the same place, and he is a different kind of grime artist to Stormzy, meaning that he actually, even his kind of rapping or whatever you want to call it, is slower, and he kind of touches on things perhaps more politically than others. Hangman I chose because it's just, I mean, if you listen to the track, you'll know why I chose it. It's really, it's got great lyrics, and there's just a really funny little thing that happens at the end that makes me laugh. It kind of goes...
Well, unfortunately, we can't play the whole song because of rights issues, but we'll play you as much of it as we
possibly
can.
Yeah, there's some really great lyrics in it. But I'm very interested because Dave is actually, it's a proper success. Stormzy is obviously a genuine success now. You know, he dominated the Brits. He was really great. But he did it all by himself. And Dave is a very similar character, and these are the things that make me happy in the charts. You know?
Okay, well, let's have a listen. This is Hangman by Dave.
I see a lot of men let their jealousy creep in. What you eat with, the girls that you sleep with, what you talk with, walk with, speak with, the first to the motives and last to the meetings. All I know is how to work, bruv. Start off as a worker, and that's just how it works, bruv. When I was trying to work, niggas never tried to turn up, but when it's time to turn up, everybody turns up. And I don't know what I was thinking with the tweets about the search. But when Harry got murdered, man was so emotional, trying to find solutions. I had some good intentions, but I guess I couldn't word them.
Miranda Sawyer's choice is there, and now it's Eamon Ford's turn.
Yay.
What will Ballymena's greatest gift to pop since Clodagh Rodgers be selecting as his favourites of 2018? And well, there'll be a load of disreputable pop music for scrawny young men who look like they're on drugs. Possibly so. Let's have a taster. This is Julia Davis. Woo! In Sky's lesbianic rom-com Sally Forever, followed by Tasteless by Shame from their album Songs of Praise, and then a change of pace with the Jake Gyllenhaal and Carey Mulligan movie Wildlife.
When I met Emma, she was really attractive, really fun, smart. She's incredible.
You okay?
It's just I'm with someone.
You in love with her?
Is it him?
I'm just fed up with you saying I'm boring and predictable, that my penis is too small.
I never said it was too small. I just said I couldn't feel anything.
What is going on with you guys?
I mean, we're friends.
Friends having sex. Happy birthday.
Oh my God.
What's that? It's chubby sheep.
Unless you start making decisions, you're going to end up a lonely old maid. And I say that with the greatest love and the greatest respect.
Yeah.
I know you want everyone to fancy you. Throw your head back like you're a sort of baboon in heat.
What?
faceless, how tasteless can you be?
I think your father has a woman out here.
No, he wouldn't do that.
No? Why do you think men do things? They either go crazy or it's a woman.
I don't think that's true.
People are drawn to things they shouldn't be. I used to dress like this all the time when I was younger. You know, it's probably nice to know your parents were once not your parents.
Did your mother do something that you wouldn't like to have to tell me about?
I feel like I need to wake up.
What's going to happen to us?
Eamon Ford's Stuff of the Year: Sally Forever with Julia Davis, Shame with Tasteless, and Carey Mulligan and Jake Gyllenhaal in Wildlife. Right, Sally Forever on Sky. This is a new dimension in pushing the boundaries, isn't it? This is a new dimension in Don't Watch It With Your Mum.
Absolutely, yeah.
What did you like about it?
I liked it for exactly those reasons. I end up rewatching a lot of Julia Davis stuff. So Human Remains, Nighty Night, Hunderby, Campin in the last couple of months as well. And it's a continuation of that, where she plays a clearly monstrous, unhinged, psychologically damaged person who has boundary issues and just keeps pushing it. And there's a lot of motifs. There is a lot of scatology in the literal sense. There are recurring motifs in all of her work with people in wheelchairs, lots of emetic behaviour, lots of scatological behaviour. And it's basically, she's kind of got her motifs and she just keeps kind of grinding away at the push, just saying, how far can I take these basic tropes? Well, this and is I love this because I think she's also incredible in getting the best cast around her, because a lot of the people who appear in this had appeared in other things, and she's clearly someone who understands.
And she directed this as well.
And how to write for these for these actors, and it was just brilliant. The person who plays Sally was just, you could just see her whole face was kind of representative of her life just crumbling and her inability to kind of steer herself away from the cliff edge.
Yeah.
And it was that amazing. It was all kind of in her face. It was like her crumpled face was just became this a motif in itself. And she was just brilliant at categorising all of that.
If it wasn't clear from the trailer, the short, you know, the short story is it's a young woman's sexual awakening.
Yes.
Which I think, a lot of the EPGs, it makes you think you're going to be seeing Rochelle off Seinfeld. You know, it's kind of very soft-focusing. It's not. It's kind of like...
They don't hold back. There's brilliant toe sex.
There's loads of brilliant... Yeah.
There's actual scissoring. It's an eye-popper.
It is an eye-popper. But really, it's actually not really about, you know, it's not about lesbian as well, somebody crossing the sexual boundary, so much as it's about a monster enters your life and turns everything upside down.
Well, it's about somebody who has no... who's kind of lacking a forceful personality, so everybody starts to dominate their life. Yeah. They've kind of surrendered
it's
their identity to fit. Yeah. And then what happens when the most monstrous person latches onto your passive nature? And they become the aggressive person. So it's a kind of, it's, I guess, it's passive aggressive.
Massive narcissism of when... you know, when the husband's dad has died and they're on the way to see, you know, to see the widowed mother, and she's in the car demanding Deliveroo. Will Deliveroo come to a car? Yeah. Well, Deliveroo has got to come to a car. And then she suddenly, a person close to her has miraculously died as well.
Yeah, she's been flattened to like a big red stripe.
She's like a terrible pop star, isn't she? Yeah. The world's most extreme.
Which is a kind of field pop star in this as well. Yeah. She's got this kind of horrible music project as well.
Yeah.
So, and dancing is another thing that she does really well in her show. Because in this one, she dances to American Woman in the pub, and she does that in a lot of her other shows, and that almost becomes another motif for her, but this is a way to project their awfulness through the medium of dance.
So how would you recommend it to your mum if you had to recommend it to
her? I wouldn't, because my mother would never speak to me ever again. If she watched that, she would not see the point.
Okay, would you recommend this band Shame that you keep banging on about to your mum? Tell us about Shame.
I don't know. I've never heard of this band. Who are they?
Why do you love Shame, and why is their album, Songs of Praise, your album of the year?
It's just they remain the most exciting band in the country. I know lots of people were getting really excited about Idols and this angry political band. I think it's just shame how they're still incredibly young. I think they're all kind of 20, 21. This is just their first burst of songs. They are probably the hardest working band in the world. I think they've done something like 160 gigs this year. Like, they just tour constantly. Oh, we've seen them go from playing to like 30 people to headline in the Forum, and that was quite a rush to kind of see them at the end of the year do this gig for, where Mel B from the Spice Girls was there losing her mind. And suddenly,
did she think it was Shane?
Yeah.
She just wandered into the wrong
place.
But like, haven't seen them in small kind of venues and kind of working the way up. They were always kind of playing as if they were playing in this massive kind of auditorium, and then suddenly you see a whole audience of kids, right, really young kids, just losing their mind to this band. So I got there early because Fontaine's DC and Sorry were supporting them. So like that rare thing where I got there at like 7:30 to see all the support bands. And by the time Fontaine's DC came on, the place was half full already, which you never see at the Forum, and it was absolutely packed. And suddenly you just saw this band have genuinely connected with this audience, and it's massively exciting just to watch that trajectory. This band, and I think it's the only time in my life that I've been right seeing a band early doors going, they've got something. I think they're going to go somewhere.
So if only we had a print weekly music press, you could make up a movement. It's a movement.
That whole kind of windmill scene, and I think we're going to be talking about some of the other people that come out of that, but you've got Goat Girl, you've got HMLTD, Black Midi, they all kind of came out of the windmill in Brixton, which is
of my road.
It is a phenomenal venue. And
so
it
it's
just
ultimately your fault.
That,
yeah, ultimately Miranda's fault for all this kind of thing.
And in a way, they've kind of opened the floodgates for a lot of bands, and it's a lot of bands that young people are into. I know people banging on about, oh, bands are dead and nobody cares about them, but there genuinely does seem to be some sort of movement happening here.
Young people.
Long may it continue.
Bloody young people.
And they've got good songs. They wrote some songs.
There
useful.
Yeah.
Splendid. It always helps, yes. Now, your film of the year is a bit more of a kind of common considered art film, actual art film, about feelings and things like that.
I'm very close to my feelings.
It's Wildlife. Tell us what it's all about.
It's about the slow implosion of a marriage, but it's also about the slow implosion of the American dream. I think it's set in 1950. It's America rebuilding itself after the war. It's Kerry Mulligan and Jake Gyllenhaal are this couple, and they're they're comfortable, but they're like a couple of paychecks away from just being homeless. Mm. And he works on a golf course, and he loses his job. And it's about his pride, about him not wanting to be seen to be weak in front of his son. And then he goes off to go and fight forest fires because he thinks this is the thing that's going to save the family. And while he's away, his wife has to become the run the house and the main breadwinner, and she gets a job teaching people to swim. And from that, she develops this relationship with an older guy, a war vet who has lost a leg in the war. And it's about her, it's not even about her sexual reawakening, it's just about her kind of going, well, this is my life, and how do I kind of get the best for me and my son out of this? And it's just, you could almost see the relationship just slowly dissolve. But you don't think, that it's not judgmental in that, oh, she's a terrible woman because she's abandoned her husband. It's like, this is the, these are the hands that they've been played. And I think it's really sad.
It's an amazing film. I've seen it and I think it's absolutely amazing. One of the things it does, which is really brave, is it doesn't follow the husband into the wildfires. You never even see him fighting the fires.
Well, they go to try and find
him. Yeah, I mean, normally in a film like that, he would have a moment. He's Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. He would have a moment being manly in fighting the fires. And he leaves and he's gone.
He's so subdued
him.
In the film as well.
Yeah, he's amazing. And she, Kerry Mulligan, there's an absolutely excruciating and amazing kind of central scene where she goes to the house of older man and she's just not quite sure what she wants or whatever. And she takes her son. That's the most fundamental bit is her son is there because she's got no one to leave him with. Mm. So he is there and he witnesses. It's amazing because you sympathise with her and the son. You can remember what it's like to have parents who are doing things that are embarrassing you. Mm. And it's just, nothing really terrible happens, but it's just awful.
Yeah.
It's a really, really terrific film. Kerry Mulligan is amazing.
They're all, I think the entire cast
is
brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant. It's a really great
film. Because there's really only kind of four main characters in the whole thing.
And everybody's complicated. So even the older guy you think would be just portrayed as a kind of horrible kind of...
not at all.
He's portrayed as quite a complex character. It's a
really
great film.
His wife has died. He's lonely. He's looking. They're all trying to find the thing that will make their life a bit better, but it won't. But it doesn't spiral off into huge fights and all the rest of it. It's basically, it's this kind of grim acceptance of, okay, it's just not working.
It's terrific.
Yeah. Sounds like a great Christmas watch.
It's honestly, I'd really recommend it.
It's so
really
beautifully
brilliant.
Filmed as well. Yeah. It's like it looks amazing. The kind of period detail is fantastic.
Very nice. Eamon, your miscellaneous is Cold Black Mornings by Brett Anderson out of Suede.
Yes.
From Out of Suede, his book. Tell us about it.
Well, it's basically his memoirs. I think he said that he wanted to write about his life story for his kid before he got too old or too adult to kind of explain it. And beautifully it cuts off just as they get signed to Nude. So they're suddenly like this kind of slightly hot band before the hysteria starts. And it's his life, so it's kind of growing up in the kind of the suburbs and then kind of trying to find music as a way to kind of get out of that. And he writes beautifully. He's a really, really good writer. I know sometimes you get annoyed because the motif called Black Mornings is repeated again and again and again. You go, yeah, Bert, we get it. We get it. We understand what you're on about. But there's lovely little period details kind of capturing London in the late 80s, early 90s before it became this cool hub when it was still, everything was still a bit grimy
crap.
And
I think the word you're looking for is crap.
And crap yeah. And there's obviously he talks beautifully about his relationship with Justine and he writes really wonderfully about that creative relationship he had with Bernard Butler and that idea of just like suddenly these people everything's kind of hinging on them kind of getting the songs right and they're kind of working towards something. They're not quite sure what it is and then it happens and it's that moment where the spark ignites, and there's a lovely, beautiful little bit of shade thrown at Damon Albarn.
It's quite a lot of shade thrown at Damon.
I think the best bit is where he said,
"Is it suede shade?"
His name is never mentioned.
So Justine obviously leaves him for Damon, but there's a bit where he said that he and Justine are walking around London and see this amazing bit of graffiti, which was at Roundhard Park Corner somewhere, or Marble Arch, and it just said, "Modern life is rubbish." And they said that we took that as a mantra. So the whole point is, Blur might have called their album that, but we discovered it first. It was our thing. We planted the seed. And he doesn't, that's all he said. It was basically, this was a thing that was kind of tied Justine and I together.
There was also a pretty excellent Suede documentary.
Oh, it's so good.
Year.
Oh, the Insatiable Ones was
on Sky. Yeah. It's amazing. And it, as well as showing a lot of crap London and, living in Finsbury Park meant pinning a bedsheet up because you haven't got any curtains, that kind of thing. It also gets into the best side eye in the history of television.
Oh, that's amazing.
When it's in Brett's bad lost years when he's on the crack and he's trying to get Suede to change their sound. He's hopping around in a pair of nasty tracky bottoms making noises.
Shirtless. He looks like that. She's turned the Wayans Again speed character off Limmy Show.
So he's hopping up pressing synthesizers that make him go blah, beep, boop, boop. And he's going, we need to sell it this. And poor Richard Oakes is sitting there with his guitar trying to make sense of it. And he just casts his eye at the camera for a tenth of a second in pure panic, like Fleabag or something. It's like this. It's one of the best bits of telly I saw.
It's a great documentary because they don't, like, it's unflinching in terms of, like, where you kind of go, right, I lost it on drugs, and the rest of the band are kind of talking like, we didn't want to, like Richard talked about going around his house, and he said like all those drug people were there, and I just yeah. didn't want to mm-hmm. hang around with them anymore. And it's basically about how kind of ego destroys a band.
Mm. Absolutely. Your track of the year, finally, is Bum Bum Bum.
Yes.
Or is that Bum 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 by Black Midi?
Yes.
This is another one of your scabby, scabrous, dirty London bands, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Who are they? What are they all about?
They are, yeah, they're another kind of noisy band from South London. I saw them in the Windmill again in the summer, and it was absolutely heaving. And they're basically just like a weird art rock band where it's heavy on the repetition, and the lyrics are lots of yelping. So if you don't like yelping and kind of weird art, angular arty rock, then it's not for you. But they're phenomenal live. The drummer is possibly the best musician I've ever seen live in any context ever. He is. You would pay £100 just to see him do a sound check. He's so good.
Amazing. The drummer is fine. Well, let's have a listen. This is Bum 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 by Black Midi.
Ways to suck themselves off. She does not cut it off. She moves with a purpose. She moves with a purpose. It is all such a purpose. It is such a purpose. It is so what a magnificent purpose. Moves with a purpose.
Finally, it's Andrew's turn to tell us about his best of 2018. How much space, robots and overgrown child man stuff will he recommend? I say that with respect.
With love and respect.
Is there any one way to find out? Here's a few of his selections. First, a bit of Succession, Sky Atlantic's and Romain Clef about the decline and fall of Rupert Murdoch, maybe, or Donald Trump. Then Boyfriend by Confidence Man from their album Confident Music for Confident People. And then Hey, More Suede, it's them again with Life is Golden from the album The Blue Hour.
Kids, can you give me 2 minutes? Oh, I changed my mind. I'm staying on.
As Adam Farm.
You fuck me.
I know that you've read a lot of books about business management. But sometimes it is a big dick competition. But I'm concerned you might be soft.
Dad, come on. The world is changing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everything changes.
He's going to blow the firm's credibility.
It's not what's in it for me. Like, what is in it for me?
I want the top job.
I'm not losing this deal.
It's my fucking company. You make your own reality. And once you've done it, everyone's of the opinion it was all so obvious. You know what? Fuck them.
My boyfriend wants to talk. My boyfriend talks too much. Too much about our love. Our love is not enough. My boyfriend wants to talk.
I really think that we've got to go over a couple of things today.
My boyfriend talks too much.
Same thoughts sink through your pillow. Same crooked smile. You're not alone. Look up to the sky and be calm. You're not alone. Look into the light and be heard. You're never alone. Your life is golden.
Andrew's choices: Succession, Confident Music for Confident People, and Life is Golden by Suede. Succession, then. This was a very, very long series on Sky Atlantic. Can you encapsulate it?
Well, the gist of it is, essentially, it is the fictionalisation of the life of the Murdoch clan just as Rupert Murdoch's about to die, But plot twist, at the end of episode one, they all think he's going to die, and then the worst possible thing happens, he recovers. So his appalling children and their appalling hangers-on, and one or two sort of likeable characters, like the number one son's wife, who seems to be a vaguely decent human being, are all trying to negotiate the fact that this monstrous Lear figure, played by Brian Cox, as the most appalling bastard on television I've seen in a very, very long time.
He's not a nice man, is
he's
he?
He's a monster. He's a monster to his children. Yeah. And he's deformed all of their lives. Mm. So number one son is a kind of very, fragile, clearly, he's from scene one we see that he's a recovering addict and his recovery is not going particularly well, has no relationship with his children. Number two son, played by Kieran Culkin, is a horrible kind of low-key figure who's so desperate for attention, he's like a yapping puppy, and has been given multi-billion pound dollar projects just to keep him out of the way.
Within the company firm.
Within the company.
Fredo. Mm.
He's Fredo, yeah. And there are, there's the incredible idiotic Tom who is trying to marry the daughter. The daughter has decided that she's going to give up life inside the dynasty and she's going to go into politics as a spin doctor. But she too is utterly corrupt and utterly selfish. And it is basically about the toxic family relationships that occur when inconceivable amounts of money are dumped upon people with basic character flaws. Yeah. And it is the kind of thing that you could easily see it restaged in ancient Rome. You could easily see it restaged in Nazi Germany. To me, it's a modern classic, and it's Jesse Armstrong. It's Peep Show's Jesse Armstrong.
Oh, it sounds great. So I haven't seen this at all. I think I would love it.
It is incredibly funny, incredibly bleakly funny. Mm. The wordplay is incredible. And just scenes that are so revealing and horrible that you can't imagine they were even imagined, let alone put on television, such as when number two son Kieran Culkin gets his corner office in the big building in New York.
Yes,
the first
bit.
Thing he does is go over to the window and have a wank at New York.
And it's quite
living the dreams.
Yeah. And there's there's an idiot cousin who's trying to sort of nudge his way to the family. It's just the most simultaneously horrifying and satisfying thing on television.
They should have called it Mansplatten.
Well done, that. Yes.
Not bad.
Yeah.
But it is indeed, is it 10 episodes long?
It's only 10 episodes.
10 hours? That's quite a lot of your life off. Do you not think that's long?
I don't think it's long.
I went to about 5 or 6.
The climactic episode where there's a wedding in a Scottish church. Actually, it might not be Scotland. It's a wedding in a fancy church in Britain. Where everybody's character failings come together to produce a denouement that is both sort of tragic for, in the physical sense, in that people suffer terribly, but also tragic in the psychological sense, in that key characters, the inevitable happens to them, what you've been able to see has been coming from.
You've got to love a wedding.
This makes the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones seem like, went quite well. So I recommend it enormously. Succession, and it's still on your Skybox somewhere if you've got Sky.
Tell us about that miserable band Confidence Man then, that dour low-key sitting in the corner. Tell us, who don't know.
I need all the cheering up I can get. Confidence Man are an Australian band, and an Australian band seem to have a wonderful thing which they all share, which is a total lack of self-consciousness.
Yes.
They do not admit to the existence of a world of music around them. They just get out there and do what they want to do. Confidence Man basically sound like a contemporary version of D-Light, in that it is beautiful, exciting dance music. It sounds like all the best bits of Screamadelica, but about a third as fast again, speed it up a bit. It's funny, it's clever. Janet Planet is an amazing front woman. It is grown-up, clever, adult pop that banishes the world without denying it. And it's just so feel-good. It is, in the way that Jaguar Mara feel good band, and in the way that, to me, it's like if Saint Etienne at their most euphoric was coming to existence now, they'd probably sound like Confidence Man. And we've been seeing them a couple of times, haven't we, Amy?
I've seen them 4 times,
four?
And they are
wow.
A joy. They are, it's 60 minutes of just happiness.
Yes, and who's number two? It's Janet Planet. What's the other bloke called?
Sugar Bones, isn't his name?
Sugar Bones or something
lovely.
Like that.
They've got a Christmas single out as well, which
Christmas
is
single's
raunchy.
Not that good.
I don't care. But
the window of that album is astonishing.
Yes.
Well,
Sugar
Bones' disco light shoulder pads and Janet Planet's disco light bra,
which
are a kind of a high point in the middle of the show where you get strobing on these personal characters. I just think it's the most fun, and I think I needed a lot of fun this year.
Slightly shunky. jiggy choreography as well, which makes it. It's really good. It's kind of Bananarama style choreography. Yeah. It's really good.
It's immensely good.
High praise indeed.
The highest of praise.
Now, you've got two albums then, because you've got Suede now. So, Andrew, you've got two albums.
And she did. Well, you know, it's my show. I can do what I like. This is Life is Golden by Suede. I just wanted to ring the bell for Suede's The Blue Hour because
it's great.
I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing something nobody's managed to do before, which is later in their career reinvent themselves and start doing not just a new thing for them, but a thing that nobody's done before.
Yeah.
They are now making these narrative albums, which are like little audio movies where, you know, everything is sequenced and songs flow into one another and the little sort of 30-second interludes, and it's a Gesamtkunstwerk. It all works together. It's all saying one big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very elegant solution to why don't people listen to albums anymore? Well, they would if you had to listen to the whole thing.
Yes.
It's not a concept album in the sense that it's about, you know, the cruelty of life, man. But it is about it's a story. Brett's life in the country. Brett goes wild in the country and discovers what that means for him and his family. But this song in particular, I think he said this is the song he's most proud of writing in his entire life. Mm. It's very, very hard when your life has been, when Suede have focused on the seaminess of life and failure and misery and not being exactly in the spotlight. I think, you know, you mentioned Damon Albarn earlier. I think that his conspicuous success has kind of driven them. But for them to get to a point where he can write an extremely sincere song about this to his son, that life is amazing and it can be amazing. I think that's lovely. So I wanted to ring the bell on that.
But that's now become their sack closer as well, which is like, whatever it is, seven albums in, the lead single off your seventh album is the big end song of your live show, which is phenomenal because you usually would have expected that it was like Beautiful Ones was how they end up. But now they're closing on Life is Golden, which is, it's proper Bowie rock and roll suicide.
There you go. It absolutely is.
Movie of the year.
Quick one on this one. It's They Shall Not Grow Old, the Peter Jackson colourised World War II movie, which is an astonishing heartbreaker, not just because of the content, which obviously we've become familiar with, but because he finds a way of making it new. And it's that simple thing of you take this hectic black and white footage where you're used to seeing people, you know, beetling around at high speed like Charlie Chaplin, and they don't really seem real, and it seems like something that happened somewhere else. And he's used contemporary technology not just to colorize it and bring it down to the tempo of the way that human beings operate, and he's not only used lip readers to fill in the dialogue so he can hear what these men were saying and it makes them real human beings again, but it's the very clever juxtaposition of the only stuff that's made to seem real is during the war itself, the framing stuff that before the war has commenced, before people have gone off to fight in London, in the cities of Europe, and afterwards as well. That all takes place in the kind of fantasy, speeded-up Charlie Chaplin context that we're used to. And then the war itself becomes real and becomes very immediate. And I just thought it was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody should see it.
Yeah, it is amazing. I really did think so. Inevitably, Your Other is a comic book.
Inevitably, My Other is a comic book. It's a really quick one. But, you know, it's Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing and Joe Bennett.
Immortal Hulk.
Immortal Hulk.
As opposed to non-immortal Hulk.
Immortal Hulk. Here's the quick sell. In complicated circumstances, the Hulk is dead. He's been shot through the head. Hawkeye has killed the Hulk, killed Bruce Banner, because the Hulk is too dangerous to have alive. What we don't realise is that the Hulk comes back from the dead. And this is kind of... They've relocated the story from superheroes and punching monsters into horror. And it's like an old EC horror comic. It's not loads of crossovers with multiple characters appearing from all over the place, not much. But what it is things rising from the grave, corpses that speak... you know, radioactive skeletons.
Is there a Dracula?
There will be, I'm sure, a Dracula at some point. But what it really cleverly does is it takes the Hulk back to the roots of what Hulk was, because Hulk was never a superhero. Hulk was a monster. Before superhero comics, there were monster comics and horror comics, and they were a huge genre. There was, you know, dozens of them, and they sold millions in the 40s and 50s. And Hulk was just an addition to this. He wasn't the kind of character we know now. And this has got him right back to his roots. It's cleverly written. The artwork is incredibly gory and visceral. And there's one incredible episode where the Hulk is literally diced into pieces.
And yet immortal.
And put in jars. The Hulk is chopped up and diced into pieces and put in jars. And he's still alive, raging to get out of the jars. I recommend it enormously.
He's like a big, green, muscly starfish.
He totally is. And the best thing about it is you don't need to read a million other comic books for it to make sense. You can read it in its own self-contained way, the way comics used to be. So that's Immortal Hulk. I recommend it.
Crikey. Okay.
Get out there and read Immortal Hulk for Christmas.
Wow. So that's our show. All that remains is for Andrew to choose his track of the year. We'll play out with that in a minute.
Miranda and Eamon are going to stick around for the extra bit for Patreon backers, which you can get if you back us on Patreon. But thanks to them for coming on the show. Sian, thank you for making this year so enjoyable and entertaining and doable.
Thank you.
Eamon and Miranda, thank you for coming in. Have a lovely Christmas.
Thank you. And to you.
Thanks to producer Sophie for making it all sound human and taking out all the bad bits. Happy Christmas. Thanks to all of our listeners and our backers. This is my track of the year, symbolising not just the plague of idiocy that seems to control and consume our planet right now, but also the triumph of native wit and intelligence that must surely one day come. From the album, No One Cares About Your Creative Hub, So Get Your Fucking Hedge Cut, this is Half Man, Half Biscuits with knobheads on quiz shows. I'll just guess and hope I'm right. The first man into space was Captain Bligh. Happy Christmas. We'll see you all next year.